So tell us about yourself and how you got into Survivor and covering it, and then we'll start to break down the cast. Who is your Winnipeg?
Welcome to the Wheel With It podcast with your host, Devin. At Wheel With It, we are dedicated to exploring DEI issues in a fair, balanced, and fun way. Let's get into the episode. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to follow the show and our guests on social media and subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app using the links in the show notes. Please remember to rate and review us. See you next time.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Real With It. On this special episode, you're hearing this hours before the premiere of Survivor Season 45, and what better guest to have than RATP podcaster, Parade.com journalist, I guess you'd call him, Mike Bloom. How are you today?
I'm great, Devin. I'm so happy that Jeff Probst declined the opportunity so that I could appear in his stead. He's been making the rounds doing the media. I said no to pressing the button on NASDAQ. Instead, I decided to do this.
I'm honored and flattered that they asked you to be in something with Probst and you decided to come to me. Okay.
Of course. Listen, I have my priorities straight. I know what comes first. NASDAQ can exist any day. Moments like this are once in a lifetime.
So tell us about yourself and how you got into Survivor and covering it. And then we'll start to break down this cast.
Woo! Loaded question. Yeah, because it's a comprehensive history. In terms of my own history with the show, obviously that came before my own involvement in it in many capacities. So I was someone who watched the show basically since it first aired. My first episode was the sixth episode of the show, period. We're talking season one, episode six, back in, I guess that would be like mid-July, just okay. About, of 2000. I was 10 years old and like 50 million people, I was suckered in by just the brand new atmosphere and newness in general that existed within this show. And then from then on, I was hooked. It was a brand new format and type of show that I never experienced before. That was my first reality show. And of course, my first reality competition show. And that led to just my world being opened up in so many ways. First, in my unabashed love for this genre, of course, the success of Survivor bred a lot of American competitive reality shows to come about. Of course, the other big two, as I like to put them, the Holy Trinity of CBS reality TV in Big Brother and The Amazing Race shortly thereafter. But really, reality competition shows are things that have been a part of my DNA since I was about 10 years old, even through that sort of, you know, dubious period of your college years when you have so much stuff going on. I would always make sure to watch Survivor the next day. And I was somebody who didn't really know a lot of other people who watched this show. It was something that I watched with my family in the first season, watched it with my sister, I would say probably through season seven, season eight. She dropped out, I continued. And it was something I harbored pretty much by myself. I would get involved in the online community. But eventually, I got around to listening to Survivor podcasts back in like 2012, I believe it was Survivor South Pacific specifically, because podcasts were even still then a bit of a relatively new thing. I know like 2009, 2010 was when the medium first came around, but I had heard via the Survivor Sucks forum about former contestant Rob Cesternino hosting a podcast that particularly had Survivor interviews. So I was interested. I started checking it out and I started following it. This is another case where I went on the road. I'd done some children's theater on a 6-month contract, and I made sure I didn't miss an episode of Survivor One World or Survivor Philippines, so that I was listening to Rob Has a Podcast throughout. Then, so 2014 comes around. That is early 2014. Survivor Cagayan is happening. Another podcast that I got into called The Survivor Historians, which is a podcast hosted by Mario Lanza, Jay Fisher, and Paul Osleson that essentially reviews old seasons of the show, talking about it from a very quote-unquote historical lens of what were people feeling at the time, what was the reactions behind it, etc. They had reached an opening in their lineup. One of their hosts, Paul, was going to Germany. He was studying abroad for a semester, and as a result, he had unstable internet. And so they were asking for a co-host. And it was something I hadn't really done before. At that point in 2014, I had just left behind my dreams of becoming an actor. I realized that this isn't something I had the hunger for first and foremost, so I didn't necessarily need to expend the time and effort to do. And I decided to say, hey, you know what? This could be something that maybe scratches that itch. And while I was trying out for this, I had reached out to Rob just on a whim, being like, hey, I have some rudimentary website work experience. I know you're always looking to update the website. Why don't I help you with that? And to Rob Saturnino's credit, he is one of the most nicest, gracious people.
Oh my gosh, isn't he? Oh yeah.
I mean, well, to show again how gracious he is, I reached out to him, not even using my own name, because I was so paranoid about any involvement of me with Survivor getting back to my real identity, which is laughable for many reasons nowadays, that I actually wrote to him under a pseudonym. And Rob Sister clicked on this email from this guy, not even going by his own name, and said, sure, I'll entertain a phone call with you. So it was really a confluence of a couple things. I was very fortunate and lucky enough to get this position on the Survivor Historians podcast. And then simultaneously, I had been working with Rob and I had told him, like, this podcasting thing is something that I unconsciously fell in love with. I'd love to do more of it if you give me the opportunity. And again, he came through, even though he didn't need to, he still did, and provided me an opportunity to start podcasting semi-regularly for the network. That then transitioned into also scripted work on post-show recaps, where
I'm loving the Ahsoka recaps, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I love it as well. I love working with so many people on there. And one of the reasons is there's just so much great scripted content out there. And especially as someone who didn't really engage in a lot of scripted stuff, it's nice to watch something like a Star Wars Rebels, watch something like Battlestar Galactica that I had never seen before, and be able to engage with it in a modern lens. No time like the present, especially in today's strike-leaning culture, to go back and watch the things that I missed out. But in participating in post-show recaps, I got the opportunity to get to know a fantastic man, nowadays a real, like, literal brother to me, by the name of Josh Wigler. Josh,
yes,
at the time,
he is awesome. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. I listened to all these.
Please interrupt me to laud any praise onto Rob Saturnino and Josh Wigler. If we could just make that the next hour, I will be pleased. But essentially, he and I worked together on a lot of stuff. And I'd expressed to him at one point that I really enjoy podcasting. And in particular, I really enjoy interviewing people and asking questions. And I was having, again, yet another crisis of identity, as we are wont to do in our 20s. And I had talked to Josh because at the time he was a journalist covering for Survivor. He had dug a nice trench for himself there at Parade. And I had talked to him and I was like, listen, I want to get involved in journalism in some way. I'm not entirely sure how. He gave me some tips and tricks about whether it was going back to school or starting to, like, freelance at very specific outlets. And then really fortuitous opportunity opened in the spring of 2017. Josh was moving on to work in a full-time position at The Hollywood Reporter, leaving a vacancy, once again, when it comes to my own broadcasting career here at Parade. And so he volunteered me for the mission. And so I have been covering Survivor, as well as Big Brother, The Amazing Race, Top Chef, Dancing with the Stars, Masked Singer, et cetera, for over 5 years at this point. Started doing it in 2017. And it's been incredible would be an understatement. I have had the opportunity to go out onto set for Survivor, get to witness how the sausage gets made in so many ways. I've had the opportunity to talk with so many different contestants before, during, and after the season, to talk with Jeff Probst, Matt Van Wagenen, lots of people behind the scenes a number of times as well. And dream come true is putting it mildly. As I've talked about in essentially the one-man show I just mentioned over the past 7 minutes or so, it's been a very long road since the 10-year-old boy who was the only one watching the show in his immediate life to now becoming what I would say is, like, a fairly, for lack of a better term, not to pump up my own ego, because I know that can be the downfall in Survivor, like, I think one of the most important, or at least loudest, voices that exist in the community nowadays.
You can say that.
Oh, thank you.
So we are getting 90-minute episodes for season 45.
Ah, yes.
How do you think that will impact what we see on the screen in the game and all that.
We're talking in a very nice time, because on the day we're talking about this, some interviews are now coming out, including one that I was able to do, all with Jeff Probst, that essentially ask the same question that you are asking about. Okay, we are in a new era, almost within a new era, as to what will 90 minutes of Survivor look like. And the answer is a little nebulous, I will say. So Matt Van Wagenen was on Tyson's podcast a couple weeks ago and had said, okay, because we're dedicating essentially, it's 30 minutes more of airtime, but really what it's like 15, 20 more minutes if you include commercials. But okay, we're going to include more camp life. We're going to include more delving into personal segments. And Jeff has come out and said that, okay, now we're using the extra time to do some more production-y things. So that means idols this season are more complex in how they'll be found. It'll be more like a set of tasks that need to be accomplished. Perhaps you might need someone else to assist you. It's more of do this than do this than what has been expressed in the past few seasons. He's also said that journeys will be more extended. Of course, the thing where cross-tribal meetups happen, one person from each tribe is selected. Sometimes you get an advantage. Sometimes you're like Carolyn and you have to watch two dude bros essentially pump each other up for an entire afternoon. And in addition to that, I think we'll get some other random stuff thrown in. There won't be reward challenges because the 26-day format is here to stay. But it was officially announced today that we are seeing the return of the Survivor auction, which is something that has
I did not know that. News to me.
I'm happy to break it to you. Yeah, really excited about this. Has not been around since season 30. 15 seasons have passed since the last time the auction was around. Now, of course, this being a season of Survivor in the 40s, I'm sure there will be twists involved or something happening, but it will be really interesting. It's just a facet of the game that I really miss, and the idea that, especially in this new,
and it's given us some of the funniest moments in Survivor history too. Oh my gosh,
that's the thing, is that on paper for the longest time it was inherently not a strategic thing to do, and sometimes we would see people behave strategically, especially when advantages were on the table, but by and large it was usually just an afternoon to let go and hork down some food and have a great time. That's led to some fantastic moments, as you mentioned. That being said, I do not necessarily think we're taking a step back into that mode, into, as Dalton Rawson referred to in his interview with Jeff, auction 1.0. I think auction 3.0 will probably still include some of those advantages in it. But what I do find interesting is that, again, in the new era Survivor, they are given such little food. Remember that they have this milestone in the game where half of them have to set out a challenge for rice. They're not given rice at the beginning of the season, even. So it could be interesting to see that this will probably be our hangriest group of castaways ever. And now we get the opportunity for them to actually pay American money to get food during the season.
They are given no rice. I thought they were given just a little bit of rice at least.
I'm trying to remember. You know what? Maybe they did. It really varies from time to time. I think what Jeff has inferred to in a lot of these interviews is that the new era format is here to stay. But within that skeletal structure of 26 days, start with three tribes, the mergatory fake merge thing, final four fire making, final three, etc. Like, the organs could be placed wherever they want to. We've seen idols get retooled each and every season to the point that I was referring to either earlier. Sometimes some tribes are given rice, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just scraping by from reward to reward. I think it just depends on like how they're looking at things from the previous season and how they want to look ahead to not necessarily change the main notes of the piece, but fiddle with the melody a bit.
Yeah, which they always like to do to keep it fresh for the kids. I understand that.
Yeah, which we'll see. I have a 4-year-old son. We were talking before we got on here. He has no interest in watching Survivor, even for a hot second. But if and when he does, I do wonder how much he'll be interested in the food staples. I don't know if he's necessarily watching for the basic amenities they're competing for.
4 is a little young. I would think like 8 to...
I don't know. Do you remember watching anything when you were 4 years old?
No, I remember Survivor first came out when I was 4, but I didn't watching it till 8.
Yeah, you never know. It could be a thing where if your kid's like playing on the ground and not paying attention while you're watching the show, it could just be something through osmosis. I do agree. As much as people have maybe poked a bit of fun at Jeff saying that they really base the show around the family sitting around the couch on Wednesday evening and, you know, the concept of everyone being able to get into it. I think four is skewing a bit young. I think ages 8 and up is probably what's written on the side of the Survivor box here.
Yes. Are you ready to get into this cast?
Always. Listen, I've never gotten off this cast, I should say. I have comprehensive written and podcast interviews with all 18 of these individuals. So yeah, suffice it to say, I know a lot about these people and I will continue to talk about them not only today, but very excited to be talking about them for the remaining few months of 2023.
Yes. Who are some early standouts?
I guess I have to start with the person you currently have up right now in our screen share. First of all, let me apologize in advance because I have talked for over 10 hours and written for 20 pieces about this cast. I'm going to be repeating myself a lot.
My biggest piece of nerves here is, am I going to remember everybody's name? Oh my gosh.
Listen, I'm an unoriginal bitch here. So I apologize if people are able to check out my content and they hear me just repeating the same thing. Not much has changed in the way I've thought about things, suffice it to say. But I'll start with Austin here, because I think Austin is someone who, when it comes to especially the new era, people love this idea of their expectations being defied, almost like a Cinderella story in a manner of speaking. I don't think it's coincidental that all the winners we've had so far in the new era, like Erica, Marianne, Gabler, and Jam, I think if you put them in a Survivor season from 1 to 40, those are the types of people that get voted out early. Some of the older castaways, the younger, smaller women, I would say, like some of the more out there, more unathletic, with no offense to Jam, personalities. Suffice it to say, I think people like to be surprised. And I think Austin is surprising in and of himself. Of course, this dude is one of the most jacked guys of this season, has the look of a total beach bro, but he has the heart of a nerd, or at least he came from this perspective where he was very much an introvert growing up and had a glow up in the middle of his life. And so he feels like he can straddle both parts of the aisle there and be able to communicate with so many people because he has lived two separate lifestyles.
And he was a junior Olympian. He's pretty athletic too. I think he'll be the challenge beef, but the thing is, how will he fare social week? Because he seems awkward.
I don't know. I think
no offense to him, but he seems weird.
Have you seen this cast though, Devin? Like, that's the very fun thing about this cast is that, like, everyone is a little offbeat. And so from that perspective, I guess no one's offbeat. They're permanently changing the beat that now they're on. That's just off from every other beat. And so I think the way he's going to come across, especially initially, as just like, this dude cannot stop smiling when I was talking to him. I think his energy is going to be positively received. I think a lot of comparisons that people have made to him preseason is actually Devin Pinto, who was like a big favorite from season 35. And I can see that. Again, he has this real laid back, lackadaisical attitude early on that I think will endear him to people and not come off as incredibly dangerous. But at the same time, this guy's a business school student. I think he has at least some sort of strategic brain there where, especially when it starts getting to the point at the end of the game and he knows all eyes are on him, if he can put some stuff together and be able to string something along, I think he has a very good shot of taking it all.
Yeah. The nice thing about the new era is it seems like the playing field is more level now than it has been.
Yeah, I would say so. Or at least, again, like I mentioned before, the equity of contestants who you felt like would not be given a shot in other seasons of Survivor, I think has increased. Now, that being said, a trend we have seen in this new era, though, is that if you look at people like Austin or other people in this cast who could be perceived as like having the quote unquote perfect package, have all the qualities that would be embodying of a winner, that oftentimes in the new era seasons, everyone else is aware of that. And so as a result, they will get rid of those people in eighth place, in seventh place, in sixth place. And I feel like that could be a big danger zone for Austin.
Yes. So what do you think is his biggest, I'm going to copy one of your questions. What do you think is his biggest strength and his biggest piece of kryptonite?
So biggest strength, I would definitely say, is adaptiveness. Again, I think that you could say his strength is his strength, but I think the idea that he is able to, at least from his perspective, get along with pretty much everyone, it's going to be great when you're stranded on an island with pretty much everyone. I think his weakness is going to be perception, is going to be the fact that at a certain point, people are just going to look at him and they're going to say, look at all these people that have come in Survivor seasons past that look like him. He has a good chance of crushing those end game challenges. We can't let him last to the end. And so he talked to me in his interview about how he wants to bank on an advantage early on, knowing that he'll be safe. And I think that's something he'll need to do in order to make sure that he can guarantee he'll outlast that danger zone.
Yeah, because they usually get voted out. Those types of people usually get voted out first, especially now. So.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is Brando. He's the nerd of the season.
The nerd? Listen, I think Survivor Social Media would disagree with you. Apparently, it's all nerds.
Battle of the Nerds should be the theme. But what do you have to say about Brando?
Yeah, Brando, I think he's really fun. This is one of a few cast members who either to get onto Survivor or inspired by Survivor went and lost a lot of weight. Brando had this story where he was someone who had not a lot of confidence in himself when he was a teenager. He saw people like Yule, like Yao Man, these like Asian men that he didn't necessarily see on TV before. And in particular, he saw David Wright, a two-time Survivor player, as an inspiration for him to go out there and conquer his fears. As a result, he got very skinny, got a much more sustainable lifestyle, and he's ready to come out onto the island and hopefully be a legend in his own right.
Yes, and his biggest, what do you think his biggest strength and his biggest piece of kryptonite will be?
Ooh, I think his strength is going to be his youth. This is something that he talks about. He gives a statistic that people in their 20s, in their early 20s in Survivor, I believe, outlast exactly 50% of their competition. And I think that's going to help him in that if he's looked at as the young kid, he's not necessarily going to be viewed as a threat, at least not initially. And so I think he can endear himself there and be able to perhaps make some inroads where people aren't necessarily eyeballing him as this kid's dangerous. He's got to go. I think his biggest weakness would probably be, again, that physical component. And not to say that Brando's no slouch. Again, he has this capacity, obviously, to be very fit, but he talks about being scrawny. And it's clear in comparison to some of these other guys that are on this season, and especially considering a lot of these challenges in the pre-merge are involving some sort of carrying weight or pushing something heavy, that if Brando's not delivering on the puzzles, which is the aspect he's been pigeonholed into, I think that it could be something that he get raked over the coals for.
But could he be a Cochran type, the mathlete to millionaire type?
I mean, he could be. The problem is that Cochran has already existed. Now, the thing is, that happened a long time ago. It happened 10 years ago, actually. So maybe it's out of the mind of people. What's also tough is he's 23 years old. And we had a 23-year-old winner in Marianne, but it can be tough sometimes, depending on the makeup of the jury, if they want to feel like, okay, I want to give money to this kid. Now, Brando is out of school. He's a software developer. So I think he would be able to have a better chance of winning over maybe someone like Drew that we're about to get into. But that's something that could also focus in on his perception.
Yes. And the next one, Drew, is he the one that divided life into four quadrants, death, demise?
Yes, Drew.
Oh my gosh. He
is a character.
He's a character. I think the next one is Brandon, but we will go down to Drew.
You're jumping one nerd for another. I see what you're doing.
Okay, what do you have to say about Drew?
Yeah, so Drew, really interesting. He is someone who comes in with this big presence and this big voice and this adamancy to which he talks. The first 3 minutes of the season are already up on YouTube. It was a QR code released via a drone show, of all things, promoting the season. And the very first words we hear of this season is Drew Basile saying he is the smartest person to ever play this game. He's the youngest person on this season at 22 years old. He is now a grad student, but he, at the time that I was talking with him, was at UPenn studying English and philosophy. So this man has a way with words, and he has definitely a head for the game and how he wants to approach things.
And he is not kidding when on paper, he's probably one of the smartest guys to ever play this game. He definitely has quite the education. So I think that's going to serve him well in the ability to think. But usually when you're that educated, you don't have the social skills. I don't mean to stereotype, but usually when you're that educated, your social skills are a little lacking.
Yeah. So, yeah. So when it comes to that, like, strength and weakness thing, I think Drew's strength is definitely like his strategic thinking. I think despite the fact that he's more so pursuing degrees in the humanities, I think he can have a good understanding as to like how pieces should work on the chessboard. Again, he is someone that seems to have a mind for strategy. And I think that could come in handy, especially in a game where pieces seem to be consistently moving. I think the downside of that is something that can often come with the downsides of those strategic types, which is people are not necessarily vibing with him early on. He says that he can come across as slimy initially, and that the way he talks might come across as like off-putting or domineering. When it's early on in a Survivor season, you are looking for any and all excuses to vote someone out as long as it's not you. And so I could see something where if Drew doesn't catch momentum early on and they go to a tribal council, they could just say like, you're not vibing right now.
So he might be a victim of hangry is what I like to call.
Yeah, this dude already looks like he's wasting away. I know they said he was trying to get a little bit more athletic in anticipation for the season, but I'm always a bit nervous. We saw this back with Mitchell Olsen, one of the tallest people to play Survivor back in season two. He was tall, he was skinny, and he basically asked to quit. He was like wasting away by the time he was voted out.
But if the other people are hangry and find him annoying, then they might be like, get him the heck off this island.
That's true. That's true as well. Yeah, I think he's going to have to find people that he really vibes with. He was putting out some feelers for people like Austin, for people like Bruce. So once they find that, I think it's possible. But yeah, it could be tough for Drew, especially early on if he's exposed in a tribal council position.
Let's move on to D. What do you have to say about D?
Yeah, so this will be maybe one of the people that gets so hangry she votes Drew out. D is the first, I believe, Cuban native to play on Survivor. She is an she's an entrepreneur, and she is someone who, even before owning her own business, has like an entire background in sales. Suffice it to say, she has built a life on pitching people to get what she wants.
Which is exactly what you need to do in Survivor. As we've seen on Big Brother, we're sweet with the 57 alliances that all think they're real, but only one of them is.
Yeah, so it's true. So D is someone who seems very down to earth. I do think she is one of the more down to earth cast members in this kind of like all over the place cast. And I think that could very easily help her. I don't see many reasons why she would stick out so much to get rid of her early on. So I think that's definitely a strength, is that ability to blend in. She does CrossFit as a hobby. So I think like she is someone who can definitely get stuff done in the physical department. I think the weakness would be that killer instinct, in a manner of speaking.
Oh, yeah. Big move-itis.
Oh, really? Because I would say, on the other hand, she talked with me about how she felt bad about voting people out. And she doesn't necessarily, it didn't seem like she necessarily came in with the willingness to backstab, to do whatever she wants. Now, look, all that could get changed once her feet actually hit that beach and it all becomes real. But I just don't necessarily see D having that capacity to like flip on her number one ally if it meant winning the game.
I see her as someone that's, oh my gosh, I'm living my dream. I'm on Survivor. I have to make a big move, and that being her undoing.
I mean, that could be it as well. We know she has that entrepreneurial spirit, which is very much about grasping at any opportunity you could have. So I could see that happening too.
Okay, let's go to dear old Bruce, returning from season 44.
Yeah, so Bruce, in case you might not remember, because I don't know if he does, because this man was medevaced after 12 hours in the game after he suffered a concussion in literally the opening steps of the season. They opened up with a challenge, as they like to do in the new era. He walked forward into the sand, conked his head on a wooden structure, was bleeding profusely, got a concussion, was evacuated that night. Jeff Probst made the offer on his podcast after the episode aired. Hey, we want to bring Bruce back at any chance that we can get. And that chance was this season.
I felt so bad for Bruce just watching it because, oh my gosh, if that was me, I would be, he ain't going to better than I did, probably because he was passed out with a concussion, but I was devastated for Bruce. So when Probe said we're going to bring him back, I'm like, yes, thank God, because it's got to be devastating to play for 12 hours, this thing you've dreamed of, and not be there for 11 and a half of them because you're concussed.
Yeah, so that being said, Bruce has walked into this opportunity as a second lease on life, but not necessarily in the way that you're like, I've got to take every opportunity for granted. I've got to rethink all the things that I've done. He's much more so, yeah, I'm definitely sure I'm not going to get a chance after this. So let me do whatever the hell I want to do. He's trying to play like the fun, crazy, drunk uncle. He wants to go on as many journeys as he can because having experienced 44 through the way that he did, getting to see it play out, and getting to interact with all the people on his season, I think has given him a head as to what you can do on a Survivor season.
Yes. He seems very, playing like it's his second time, even though it's technically his first, because he only got to play for 30 minutes.
Well, yeah, listen, you keep spreading that more to the cast so that they know he's not really a returning player. His experience is the same as everyone's once he wakes up on day two.
I know. They were like, he's returning. I'm like, no, he's not been to day two.
Technically, but yeah, he has 12 hours of the Survivor experience, most of which were spent with him just like sitting there dazed and confused. So yeah, it doesn't count in my opinion.
And nauseous. So it doesn't count. Next one is Brandon Donnellan, the anxious one who I can relate to because he said the biggest thing is going to be controlling my nerves. And if I was a Survivor, that would be my biggest thing.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Listen, he is one of the most relatable contestants, in my opinion, in that he is so explicit about how he is just an anxious person in real life. He gives the example of like how he can never enjoy a vacation because he's always worried about the next thing, like getting on the plane, making sure the plane trip is fine, making sure they get into the hotel fine, making sure everyone has something to eat. And it's something that will be tough to bring on because it is also countered by this idea that Brandon may be one of the biggest fans to ever play this game. He is.
Oh my gosh. And as a fan too, when you see, I've never seen it. I hope to experience it one day by being on the crew. But when you see Jeff Probst standing in front of you, you're like, yes.
Yeah, like, of course. Like it's palpable right there. And I don't think that excitement, no matter how many days he lasts, it won't go away. Like this is something that he's been wanting to do. For 15 years, he has been like so profusely involved within the fan community in several circles. So it's going to be tough at this is a game that is making every ounce of his imaginations a reality, but has that jut up with the actual reality that like he can be a very panicked person. And you want to be panicked to a certain extent in Survivor, but there's a very good chance.
Paranoid over.
Yeah, because you'll drive yourself crazy, but you'll also more importantly drive other people crazy.
Yes, and crazy is the ticket to getting voted out. So what do you think his biggest strength will be if he can use that anxiety to think?
I think his biggest, I would say, strength is, let's go back to the name you invoked with Drew. I think is this Cochrane idea of self-deprecating humor to endear himself. His girlfriend told him, like, just make people laugh and you'll do okay. I think Brandon has a really great sense of humor. And I do think he is on a tribe with people that might be able to sympathize with his anxieties rather than put himself off from others. And so I do think that there were some people that were eyeballing him in the preseason as like giving off this good energy. So I think he doesn't actually need to stray that far from being himself in general. I think he can really get into the good graces of people so long as, again, he doesn't get too panicky.
Yes. And that is going to be his key is, and I'm sitting here saying this with an anxiety disorder while eating food on my couch, watching him, is controlling the panic and being like, it's just Survivor. Jeff Probst is just Jeff Probst. It's the same game we've been watching. It's not anything different.
Yeah, that's easier said than done, though. You can't say this is just Survivor when you're playing Survivor.
I say that sitting here podcasting about it, but
right.
It's easier said than done. Okay, I went up, now going down, sorry. Our next one is Emily Fuppen. What do you have to say about Emily?
Yeah, so when I talk about how Brandon might have some like surprising kindred spirits in the game, this is one of them. And Emily definitely sticks out. This is an archetype that we have not seen on Survivor in a while. Not to say she's a villain off the bat, but she is a very honest person. She is very blunt about herself, about her fellow cast members, about the situation, etc. It has made for incredible sound bites so far, but there is a very sizable chance it will not do well when it comes to actually living with people on the island.
Yes, and she seems like a Corinne type to me. Her and Kendra seem like the Corinne type. Rob was saying that there isn't enough blue fleece in the United States to...
Yeah.
Yeah, and Corinne types are fun to listen to on a podcast, but not fun to listen to when you're stranded on an island. So...
Yes, and that's the thing is we certainly have had cast members that have been that snarky sense of self in confessional. Even Corinne had her people that she got along with. It wasn't like she was this incredibly mean person in person, unless it was with Sugar. Emily might be a bit of a different story. She admitted to me she can be this transparent, blunt person, but she's trying to spin it positively. She's not coming in being like, and this is why you shouldn't pick me to win. She does say, hey, if you know where all of my loyalties lie at all times, I can't lie, really. I'm not good at it. Wouldn't you rather go with the devil you know better than the devil you don't? And considering how much these people think and overthink over the course of this new era, that's a sizable argument.
Yeah, she can use that paranoia to her advantage almost and say, oh, you think he's shady? I'm not.
Yeah, there is this candor that it's almost like something that can be weaponized. You want me on your side because... you'll know if I'm betraying you. And wouldn't you want me doing that? The person that you see coming is much better than someone who's within your own house and you don't even see what they're doing.
So what's your biggest piece of kryptonite?
Emily, I just think in general, I mean, she said...
yes, Emily.
She said she's like not the physically strongest. She's not the most adept for the outdoors. Again, there are many reasons why Emily herself would say that she could be a target early on. But if anything, the new era has proven that, again, these typical targets, if they get enough momentum, are able to slip under the radar and escape. So who knows, if Emily survives her first tribal council and her tribe goes on a winning streak, maybe she's able to concrete a new majority here and make sure she's safe through the merge.
She might be one of those where it's either first voted out or final three.
Yeah, though I don't know if at a certain point, I know it's only a 26-day season, but given the interpersonal difficulties that might happen, I think even at a certain point, look, there's a reason why Abby Maria didn't make it to the final three both times. At a certain point, people are just like, I can't do this anymore. Yes, I cannot do this.
As much as I love Abby Maria, there's a certain point where people are like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's lovely in real life, not just on an island. It's not good.
Yeah, but amazing for television, which is what we want.
Amazing for TV. Just amazing. She was some amazing TV, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Now we have Hannah Rose, who, like me, is platonically in love with Jeff Probst. So she is my most relatable contestant.
Get in line.
What do you say about Hannah?
Yeah, so Hannah is really interesting because she is a therapist. But I think if you're expecting the sort of buttoned up and how does that make you feel type of therapist, that's not necessarily Hannah. Hannah, I would not say is a free spirit compared to maybe another contestant on this season. But she is someone who prides herself on being impulsive. In her interview with me, she indicated all these tattoos on her arms being like, I don't know why I got most of these. I just thought they were cool. She's someone who studied to be a psychologist, became a therapist, and was like, it's a lot to deal with people's problems on the daily. Let me instead manage my own private practice. She is someone who follows to the beat of her own drum. And she also credits this idea of getting sober at 20 as something that, of course, saved her life, but I think also allowed her to have the capacity to make these large pivots in her life that I would say loosely translate to the game of Survivor.
Which is incredible that she got sober at 20, and the work you have to do in there, I've never gotten sober, but the work you have to do in therapy on yourself for anything, anxiety, getting sober, it lends itself so well to the game of Survivor because you have to be so self-aware.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's the thing is I think Hannah, much like Emily, is like very true to herself in so many ways, to the point where she was someone coming through saying the most negative things about herself alongside Emily of, I can be this. I'm a hungry bitch when I try to starve myself. I haven't done a lot of intensive prep to get out here. And so I think, again, that honesty can be really refreshing. And I can see her getting on with an Emily, with a Brandon, where you have these three self-deprecating three musketeers that could possibly work together.
That would be the best alliance, not for, maybe not for the game, we'll have to see, but for TV, that would be so good.
It'd be amazing. Yes, we're manifesting it right now.
What do you think her biggest weakness will be?
Her weakness might be the survivability aspect. I know that she's a camp counselor, so I think she could do in a better spot than Emily as an example, but I'm not sure. I could see something where it's more so survivability with other people. Like in particular, she was very adamant in her first impressions press about being very, I wouldn't want to say judgy, but like making a lot of overweening statements about these people. If those play through to how she's going to judge people on island, that can be a little tough.
Yeah, because people don't like being judged in real life, much less on an island starving to death. So yeah, I think if she's too judgy or comes off as too judgy, then she'll be voted out pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have Jay Maya, and I've heard a snippet of one of her songs in the 1 minute video. I'm like, I'm going to have to go down with that.
Oh yeah, you should definitely check it out on Spotify. Amazing. She's got some really cool stuff going on. I think she actually just came out with a video as well. Perfectly timed. This is a true artist, right? Timing things to when she's about to be shown to millions of people on national TV. Yeah, Jay Maya's been hustling. She is a hustler, I think. She's wearing the red buff, much like she would if she was on that season.
Yes. What do you have to say about Jay Maya?
So Jay Maya's story is definitely one of the most eventful ones, I will say, of this cast, where her whole life she was fated to go to Harvard Law. And she even went to Harvard for undergrad and got into Harvard Law. But in that moment, she had to look at herself and be like, do I really want to do this? Am I already set to have my life set in stone, like looking at Medusa? No, I'm going to defy my fate. And so she ended up declining that invite to Harvard Law, struck out west, and decided to become a singer-songwriter. She had gone viral previously on TikTok, and that's now what she does as a main gig.
So I wanted to be a lawyer for a period of time. And then I thought, the time, money, or sanity to go to law school. So let's just produce for a living. And here we are.
Yeah. Jay Maya, I will admit that I think she is one of the interviews I did where she's not talking that much about her gameplay style. Listen, she's navigating the entertainment business, which is so tough. So about first impressions and all who you know. And it's not dissimilar from Survivor.
Today.
Yeah.
If she can navigate the entertainment business, she can navigate Survivor pretty well.
I think so. And listen, she'll keep her tribe members consistently entertained. So I think that is one of her biggest strengths, is like branding, in a manner of speaking, not Brando. But this idea that she has made a career on being able to present a certain version of herself that's palatable. Which is, again, I think entertainment in a nutshell, and especially in this social media day and age. Listen, if she makes it to jury in the final three, that's exactly what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
The downside is, again, for me, the physicality. She is, I think, one of the smallest women on this season. We saw
she's so stick thin. And yeah. I'm not saying that in a disparaging way, but she's so stick thin. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so it's tough because we saw this last season in particular with contestants like Claire. Some of these smaller women are oftentimes looked upon as, okay, we need to keep strength in challenges. What defines strength? The big guys that can push things around. So who's disadvantaged? The smaller women. And I feel like if that's the case, if they keep going along with this logic, that can mean yet again, Jay Maya would suffer the fate as those women that came before her.
Yes, but then you have a Noelle who proved to all those boys that, look, you need me for the challenges.
Yeah, that's very true. And so hopefully Jay Maya can prove that as well.
Okay, our next one is Jake with the Irish Whisper, as Bryce likes to say.
Yeah, so Jake O'Kane, one of my favorite interviews, really big character. This is a Jake of all trades, if you will. So he just recently graduated law school. He's a newly barred lawyer, but he also is a bartender and he also teaches children's theater. And so suffice it to say, this is a guy that is very much about people skills, whether it is liaising with his own clients, with a judge, whether it's wrangling unruly children to do a production of The Lion King. I think Jake has people skills in many ways.
Yes, if you can corral a bunch of preschoolers, you can pretty much do anything, because preschoolers are not the easiest age group to corral.
Yeah, and I think at a certain point from a nutritional perspective, like people's bodies break down and they become almost the mental capacity of preschoolers. So I think Jake is par for the course here.
Yes, and some people act like preschoolers on the island, so he'll have experience.
Yeah, so what's interesting is...
Not in the new era. We have conduct codes in the new era.
To certain perspectives, yeah. It doesn't stop people from getting hangry, as you mentioned before. The thing about Jake that's going to be interesting is that he is not completely lying about his occupation. He will say that he's a lawyer, but that he's a district attorney. It'll be interesting considering we're about to get to the other lawyer on her tribe, but I still feel like there could be this stigma against lawyers that could possibly work against Jake if he is as honest as he's presenting himself to be in his dishonesty.
Which is going to be hard when you have another lawyer on the tribe saying, oh, he's not a public defender. He's something else, because I've been around public defenders.
Yeah, and there's also an idea of what we saw with Cody and Justine in season 43, where they were both salespeople, and Cody used that opportunity to say, she's upfront about her thing? I'm not going to be, but I'll use that as a reason to turn all the attention on to him.
Yes, which is going to be a good strategy if she can pull it off. Now we have Julie, the mom of the season, or one of the moms.
Yeah, so Julie is the oldest cast member of this season. It's a very young cast overall, with the exception of Julie and Bruce. But Julie is essentially like living a second life at this point. She's essentially in her 20s because Julie had been living this life up to this point as an art teacher. In her late 30s, she was getting divorced. And during arbitration, she happened to get stopped in the law firm that she was attending. And someone just happenstance asked, hey, are you the new law associate? And throughout that arbitration, she realized, oh, I could actually be a lawyer if I wanted to. And so she made good on her second chance at life. She went to law school, is now an estate attorney. Simultaneously, she discovered Survivor Second Chance back in 2015, was really inspired by all these people making their second chances in life happen, and decided that the show was right for her.
And that's an incredible story, by the way, because I'm like, see, if you still want to go to law school, it's never too late. I can't imagine doing law school single while living with my parents and having no other job. Like that, doing it with kids is like a whole other level of commitment that you have to.
Because she did all night classes because she was still working her job during the day and taking care of her two teenagers. It was a lot. But again, she is a hard worker. And I think that's going to help a lot when it comes to those initial days where she might be perceived as the odd person out.
Do you think her age is going to handicap her at all?
Not maybe early on. But I do think if she gets enough wins under her belt as a tribe, if she has enough momentum to get in, I think she'll be good. She is a hard worker, and it seems like she is pretty fit, especially for her age. I think perhaps unlike some other members of her tribe, she could be looked at as more of an asset. I do think her type can be tough at the end, because how many times have we seen a mom figure get into the final three?
Oh my gosh. Dawn, take your teeth out. Yes.
Dawn, take your teeth out. Even recently, we had two moms in the final three. Double the chances in Heidi and Carolyn. Neither one got the money, because I do think there is this unfortunate stigma of, listen, I don't want my mom to vote me out, in a manner of speaking. I don't want this person that I confided so much in, like a motherly figure, to have ended my life in the game. And listen, a lot of trends have been bucked in the new era. Maybe Julie could be an example of it. I don't necessarily see it here, but I do have positive thoughts towards her in the game in general.
Yes, and her biggest weakness is probably going to be what?
I would say her biggest weakness It might be her energy. She is someone who is like very intense, delightfully. If that keeps going and going throughout the season, though, I could see, especially if she's with certain people, if she's with Hannah, if she's with Emily, they're not going to take to that eventually.
Yes, Jeff will like it, but not her fellow castaways. I think we'll see. Jeff will love her, but...
Oh yeah, Jeff will absolutely love her. First, she's the closest in age to him, so that certainly helps. He doesn't feel like he has to do hey fellow kids to this cast out here. But also, I think she just has that perfect confessional energy to her, almost Big Brother-like.
Yes, and I think she'll do some good confessionals too. She'll give us some good confessionals.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Our next one is Caleb, who I happen to love, by the way.
Yeah, Caleb.
What do you have to say about Caleb?
So much. Caleb is a big highlight as well, big character coming in. This is not a guy who I think explicitly came in and said, I want to be the villain, but this is someone who got into Survivor by getting a list of all the seasons with the biggest villains in it and started there. This is a guy that has always had a bit of mischief in him. Ever since a young age, he has been working for 15 years in a variety of odd jobs. As he himself says, I've never been qualified for anything I've ever done. He's always figured out some sort of way to work around it. He was able to become a lifeguard despite not passing the swim certification.
I cracked up when I heard that. I'm like, of course. I'll wake up one day and go be a lifeguard.
He had a job painting houses, but then when he would be truant or forget things, he would blame it on a fake twin brother of his named Jamal to get away with it. So this is a guy that knows ingenuity and is able to like essentially get out of any scheme he finds himself in, which is part and parcel with Survivor.
Which, is he going to take that to an extreme though? That's what I'm worried about. And say, okay, this, and they're going to say, this guy's lying too much. We have to get him out.
Oh, 100%. I think he'll be in a good position early on because yes, he might be one of the most polarizing contestants in the preseason, whether it's his look or the fact that this guy was like beaming a mile wide at everyone. Nearly everyone had something to say about Caleb in the preseason. I do think early on, especially because he is one of the more physically strong members of his tribe that will endear him to people, I think he will use that inch to take a mile and start looking for idols and start going on journeys. And I think eventually it will come to bite him.
Which he has to tamper that lying. I know that's so bad to say in a game like Survivor, but you have to tamper your lies a little bit, especially in those first few days to get past those early boots.
Yeah, definitely.
Now we have one of my other personal favorites in the cast, Keturah. How do you think Keturah is going to do?
Yeah, Keturah, civil rights lawyer. Super awesome for her. She's literally doing the Lord Jeff's work out there.
Yes.
But what's so interesting is that she comes to the island almost as an escape for herself, that she is doing this incredible work each and every day. Understandably, that leaves her a bit drained. And I think she needs a reminder that she is more than just her work. As much as we're talking about somebody like Jake, perhaps being pigeonholed for his occupation, Keturah's, no, I need to prove I am more than a lawyer, and that's why she's on Survivor.
How do you think she's going to handle it being a civil rights lawyer if social issues come up on the island?
She is not going to be outspoken. That's just who she is. When she talked to me, she said that she was always having an involvement in civil rights, and then the lawyer thing just came with the territory. I think in Survivor, you always play as some form of yourself out there, albeit in a very pressurized situation. She can't not, I don't think, speak up if she sees any form of injustice being done.
So I really related to when you ask her what is like one life experience, she's, oh, just being a queer Black woman is the life experience. Because I, having a disability, know what it's like to be the only something in a room and having to navigate all these different personalities and perceptions of you. So I think that's going to bode well for her. Okay. Next one, what about Kelly?
Yes, Kelly Nalbandian. Kelly is like Keturah, a New Yorker, like Keturah in her 30s. Like Keturah has a name beginning with K. Different occupation, though. Kelly is a critical care nurse. She found Survivor during the pandemic when basically no one wanted to come into contact with her or direct contact with her, as it were. She found the show, she instantly fell in love with it. And she is here to prove that nurses should not just be known for helping your boo-boos, because she's about to enact some on these players.
Yes, she is about to cause some boo-boos. And I think, honestly, nurses have an edge, as we've seen with Sweet, as you'd like to say. Nurses have an edge on Survivor because they see people at their worst every single day and have belligerent people yelling in their face. And yep. the nurse meme TikToks, if you are looking for a laugh, Google nurse TikToks, and oh my gosh, the memes are hilarious.
Yeah, I always say that service experience, customer experience is like the best thing you can have before going out to Survivor. Just this idea of dealing with so many different people and meeting them at that energy level. And being a nurse is ultimately like the biggest service of service jobs, I think. To your point, not only are you dealing with people with different energies, you're like dealing with people with different energies while they're dealing with a bunch of stuff. And you are having to deal with some worst case scenarios, some literal life or death situations. How much mental and emotional composure does that take? Survivor is nothing compared to that, in my opinion.
Especially in critical care. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There's a reason why it's called critical care.
Yes.
Like, you have to have this very cool, calm, and collected mindset of, I just need to focus on the mission at hand and I'll get through. And I think during some of the most arduous moments in Survivor, that'll be nothing for Kelly.
I know. People will be like freaking out and she'll be like, just another Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, what about the swearing queen who dropped the F-bomb more times in succession than I have ever heard a Survivor drop the F-bomb?
You just haven't talked to enough Survivor players.
Yes,
like off camera.
I haven't talked to enough of them. But Kendra.
Yeah, Kendra McQuarrie. Really love talking with her. So she is a bartender, originally from Massachusetts, lives in Colorado. And her attitude is just like, anywhere the wind blows, I will go. She told a story about leaving college to go build earth ships in the desert in Taos, New Mexico, which, if you don't know, it's essentially like an entirely constructed, self-sustainable piece of housing.
I Googled what that was and I Googled dirt bitch and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a real thing.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. Like once I found out about it, and listen, so shelter building will be absolutely a cakewalk for Kendra. And she is someone who has like a good physical presence, but she is another one of these people where the downside can be like, if she does not get along with the right amount of people, whew, good golly. And we have seen these types of personalities do well. Nora, Debbie being two good, Carolyn being great examples of the offbeat woman that occasionally can have personality conflicts. But at the same time, sometimes the dice doesn't roll in that way. And that could be the case with Kendra.
So what are Earthships again? I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
So Earthships are basically homes built with repurposed materials.
Okay. Yeah, because I never heard of it. I thought she was joking when she said Earthship. I'm like, oh, this has got to be an inside joke or something. But no, they're real.
No, you didn't think she was talking about spaceships or something?
I thought she was talking about something from like some fantasy novel or whatever, because Earthship sounds like something out of Ahsoka, not
real,
which is a great solution for the homelessness crisis, by the way.
Yeah, it's a fantastic solution. I'm glad. I'll admit, I was someone who didn't necessarily know of it right now, but I love the sound of it.
Yeah, so hopefully we can get more for Earthship, even if she doesn't win.
Yeah, exactly. If not, if anything, she'll build an Earthship for herself as like a spy shack.
Yes, she'll build a Earthship spy shack instead of a regular one.
There we go.
Let's go to my winner pick for Survivor 45, Sabaya.
Ah, that's a very good choice.
Sabaya.
Yeah, so Sabaya is a recent vet out of the Marine Corps that she was in up until 2 years ago, but is now a truck driver. And the thing Sabaya has going for her is that genteel Southern charm. As she told me, I could be a serial killer. And you'd say, oh, I'll pat you on the back. The way she talks is just so comforting. Sorry. She has this ability to just, I think, really calm your energy down with the way she speaks to you. And I think that can be deceptively deadly, not to mention she has, of course, comprehensive military experience. So she is used to dealing with shit conditions, with group dynamics, with trying to work with another leader and fit in with their style. So she has a lot going for her.
So what do you think her biggest weakness? I think her biggest weakness will be she's too nice. And I hate to use that term in 2023, but she is too nice. And I think she'll be so nice she doesn't want to make the big move.
I think her greatest weakness will be that I could see a point in the game where almost overnight, everyone realizes what she's doing and decides to turn on her.
Yeah.
Not to be too obtuse about it, but considering the optics, but like we saw something similar happen with Drea in Survivor 42, where like initially everyone wanted to work with Drea. Everyone loved Drea. Drea was grabbing advantage after advantage. And then like at one point in time, everyone's...
I don't think she'll be able to do enough damage control, as they call it, to mitigate that perception before they vote her out. I think that's going to be...
No, I mean, she's going to be blindsided no matter what, because that's how we do things nowadays.
Yes, she's going to not use her shot in the dark and should have used it. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah. What about Sean? Now, Sean has probably one of the most incredible stories of the season. I hope it comes up at least a little bit on the show. But
yeah, listen, 90-minute episodes. They have no excuse not to. Sean's an inspiration. So Sean is somebody who's originally from New Jersey, but grew up Mormon and was gay. And that is quite a crossroads, if you know anything about the Mormon religion, to the point where he actually underwent conversion therapy for some time. If you don't know what conversion therapy is, just know it is illegal in most of the United States nowadays. That is how bad conversion therapy is.
Yes, it should never be anything done to anybody, let alone a child.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, about 7 years ago, after experiencing that traumatic past, Sean finally realized, like, to hell with it, I have to be myself. And his life after that has been kismet. He ended up soon after finding his husband, who is also a big Survivor fan. He became the first openly gay principal in his school district in Utah. And then he finally felt, after all these years, now that I'm comfortable in my own skin, let me go out and play this game that I love.
How do you think his life experience, if any, will come into the game?
Again, like I mentioned with Kelly, this is personal experience, impersonal experience, I should say, out the wazoo here. Think about the amount of problems he has to deal with on a daily basis and face it all with a smile, because he's dealing with the youngest minds in America.
Yeah, and if you can make it through conversion therapy, I'm sorry, you can make it through anything.
He has shown a lot of fortuitousness. If you listen to him talk, his energy is just absolutely infectious. He's got a smile a mile wide, and you just want to be a part of that. You want to soak that in. So I do think that Sean is going to be able to endear himself to a lot of people early on with this sort of motivational attitude, especially if he is on a tribe that we are forecasting will not do so well early on. I do think his weakness may be in the physical department. He admitted to me that he did work out. It's not a lot, but he did work out. And again, if his tribe just keeps losing and losing, there might be a certain aspect where they're like, yeah, dude, you could cheer us up all day. But the fact of the matter is we keep going back to tribal council every other day.
And he's got to be the number one target post-merge if he kind of lets them in on his story, because as much as we don't like to admit it, they're going to say, oh, he's got a great story. If he makes it to the end, he wins.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do Nicholas Sifu. I guess we just call him Sifu, but his real name's Nicholas.
Yeah, let's talk about Sifu. So Sifu is a word that comes from the martial arts world, meaning master. Sifu is an expert in martial arts. He's been doing it since he was 6 years old, Tai Chi in particular. Now owns his own gym, in addition to doing a bunch of other stuff. He's a touring musician. He's a bartender as well. So again, yet another Jake of all trades that's contained within this like big, boisterous body.
So he's a huge guy. I didn't realize how huge he was. till I watched the 1 minute video and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, he is a big guy, which will help a lot, again, in these strength-based challenges. But you talk about the hangry aspect. This is a guy who tried to reduce his caloric intake preparing for this show, knowing what was coming, but it could still be a lot if he intends to last 26 days on basically nothing.
So do you think it's going to be Jonathan Young intense or not that intense?
I think it's tough because, like, I don't know if Sifu is the guy, because it wasn't even that Jonathan wasn't eating as much. It was also that Jonathan was consistently going out and catching food and going out and chopping down logs and going out and building the fire. And not to say that Sifu won't be the provider, but at the same time, I do feel like he won't be as upfront and out front as Jonathan was in, like, making sure to go the extra mile in every way.
But I think his strength in the pre-merge could be his demise in the post-merge, because they could say, oh, he's a big challenge, so we got to get him out. He could win his way to the end. So.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. 100%. Despite the fact that he's going to try to, like, hide the fact that he is very well balanced, quite literally. Again, that Tai Chi just gives him such a great sense of hand-eye coordination. You look at him and you have to assume that he's going to do well in the individual challenges.
And hand pushing? I've seen a little bit of it when they were showing it on the 1 minute. Hand pushing is so hard because you're basically taking your whole body weight and pushing it against another. It's crazy.
And it's also tactical as well, because it's, okay, how much do I give anticipating the other person's move? And how can I use that person's energy against them? So there is a bit of strategy involved as well.
It's like Survivor, but you're fighting each other instead of burning each other out.
Yeah, but that's already a show. It's called Fight to Survive, apparently.
Yes, which I haven't watched. I need to watch it.
There we go. That's the cast. Let's get ready to have these people start gunning for each other from the jump.
Who is your winner pick?
So I have been very upfront about this. Mine is Kelly. I feel like she has a lot of those interpersonal skills and has the physical capacity, as well as, I wouldn't say she was so upfront about her game plan, but she has shown a capacity to be like, I need to do what it takes to get done. I do feel like her archetype is someone that would win more so in, like, the 20s and 30s than the 40s, but I feel like she is set up well to at least go far. And if she can get in a clutch couple wins, sit there with a good couple of people in the end, I think she has a very good chance of taking it all.
So who's your first voted out pick?
I'll go Occam's Razor and probably say Emily. I don't see that yellow Lulu tribe necessarily winning the first couple of challenges, and then they would just probably go with the easy vote and say, Emily is getting onto people's nerves this moment. Let's get rid of the bad blood.
Yeah, because the people that usually get on the nerves are the first ones voted out.
Usually, yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about the season?
I have talked so much about Survivor 45 that I will forever hold my peace at this moment. Thank you for having me on, and thank you to everyone who has checked out any and all of my content in the preseason. It is so appreciated.
Please go check his content out. We'll have the link in the show notes. I know you only have a day by the time you're hearing this, or a few hours by the time you're hearing this, but please go check it out. He works so hard on it.
Thank you, Devin. Thank you for having me on too. This was a fun opportunity.
We will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to follow the show and our guests on social media and subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app using the links in the show notes. Please remember to rate and review us. See you next time.